For the rest of the hour, we're going to have the send-off for another pioneer. That send-off was for the spacecraft Pioneer 10. On January 22nd, NASA received a very faint signal when checking with the craft, and it was that point at a distance of a little over 7.5 billion miles from Earth. Since then, the ground staff has heard nothing, leading them to believe that the transmitter on Pioneer 10, which was originally designed for just 21 months, has finally given out 30 years later. Joining me now is Larry Lasher, the project manager for Pioneer 10. He's at NASA's Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California. Welcome to the program, Dr. Lasher.
How do you do, Ira?
It's been a good run, hasn't it?
Oh, fantastic. Unbelievable.
You know, a lot of people who were listening today weren't around when Pioneer 10 first got going. Give us a little nutshell of why it was launched and what it did.
Well, the object of Pioneer 10 was to be the first spacecraft to go out in the outer solar system. It had to pass by the asteroid belt first, and actually the target was Jupiter. And this was very exciting, and it was a very dangerous mission, we felt, because you had to get through that asteroid belt, you know, which is a band of dust, rocks, and debris, and we weren't sure that we could get through there without damage. And then Jupiter itself is in a very awesome planet, radiation, large gravity. So that was the 21-month mission, and we succeeded. We succeeded. And
beyond your wildest dreams, you said.
Yes, just getting out there itself was just a tremendous goal. It dispelled the myth of a hazardous asteroid belt, and it also demonstrated that future spacecraft would be able to pass through with no special protection required. And so that enabled spacecraft like Voyager, Ulysses, which went out of the ecliptic for solar measurements, and Galileo, and now currently Cassini is on its way to Saturn and its moon Titan.
Mm-hmm. How far away is it now? Can you give us a place in the galaxy or solar system where it might be at this point?
Sure. It's 7.6 billion miles away. And to give you some perspective, the outermost planet, Pluto, is less than half that. So we're twice as far as the most outermost planet. And to give some kind of directionality to it, if you look at your constellation Taurus, and there's a red star in that constellation called Aldebaran, we're headed towards there. And we, by our calculation, in 2 million years, we'll be passing by that star.
Mm-hmm. And they certainly don't make them like they used to. I mean, wasn't Pioneer one of the golden age, what they call the golden age of space robots there, the same decade that you had the Voyagers and things like that?
Yes. Well, we seem to be pretty good. Pioneer 10 was a very simple spacecraft. To give you an indication, very small. It was like 9 feet in diameter. That's its dish telescope that received the signals and sent the signals, about 9.5 feet in length. This is on the order of a large backyard TV satellite dish that used to have in the old days for the more miniaturized ones came.
Yeah. One of the most fascinating things about Pioneer 10 and those early ones is that the radio transmitter on it had a giant power capacity of transmission of 8 watts.
You're right.
That's less than a refrigerator light bulb.
Right, night light.
It's a night light. And
yes,
yet
sir.
You could still hear it 6 billion miles away. It's 7 billion miles away.
Yeah.
How
did you do that? That's a good question. I'm awed by it too, but you know, we have these fantastic, and NASA have these radio dishes, telescopes, located throughout the world, 3 major locations, and they have these 70-meter dishes, and that's like about a football field in diameter, and it can detect, it's the faintest photon caliber thing. Just to give you an indication how this 8 watts translates into what we actually receive on Earth, it's like about a millionth of a trillionth of a watt. That's unbelievable that we could get that, but we did. We were able to detect that until last month, and it just was, the power just wasn't there for the transmitter power. We were just too far away.
Now, one of the other interesting things about the craft was that it was carrying a gold plaque with a message to the solar system on it, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
Designed by Carl Sagan, among others.
That's correct. We were the first emissary beyond the solar system, so we carried this small gold-plated aluminum plaque, and as you mentioned, a pattern designed by Carl Sagan and Frank Drake, who is still active in search for extraterrestrial intelligence. If I can describe it for you,
sure, go ahead.
There's a figure of a man and a woman, which is shown to scale next to a line silhouette of the spacecraft. And to give it some sizing, we have some bracketing bars on this to the right of that representation. And it's in binary, because any sentient being, whoever finds it sometimes in the future, millions, billions of years from now, perhaps that they would know the language of mathematics, we feel. So it's a binary system, 1000, which represents the number 8, and that was the height of the figures. And you say, well, okay, now what is 1? So we have a radiation wavelength, which is very characteristic throughout the universe of 21 centimeters. And so that represented 1. So therefore, you know, you translate that and you get the woman was about 5'6". Now, there were also some cosmological objects shown to kind of identify the origin of the spacecraft. And these were what their pulsars, et cetera. But there's a description, there's 14 lines that indicates that's the number of these cosmological objects there are. And some sentient being, hopefully they have a library there, and they said, oh, well, yes, I see that must be somewhere in the Milky Way. And also it's sort of a time tag, because we also indicated the frequencies in binary, and that would vary over millions of years. Mm-hmm. So we had that, and we also had a schematic of the solar system and a path that it was taken. So Carl Sagan used to say, the ex-Carl Sagan, that this would tell us when we are, who we are, and where we are. That would be what the description would show.
Talking with Larry Lasher, Project Manager for Pioneer 10, on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Let's see if we can get a call or two in before we have to go. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff in Oklahoma City. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I got two questions. My first one is, or one's a question, one's a comment. My first question is, how many new ideas, discoveries, concepts has Pioneer 10 actually brought into the human scientific community?
Larry?
Any idea?
Yeah, well, Jeff, okay. This was the first to go out there. This was actually constructed in the late 60s. It was launched in 72. Our electronics were in a primitive stage. So much has advanced since that time. But what I think Pioneer did, it showed, in an engineering sense, its achievements were just manifold. It survived the asteroid belt, as I mentioned. And it's a vehicle for science. It actually took the first close-up pictures of Jupiter and its satellites. It returned 500 images at the time. And it got the first close-up scientific data. It charted Jupiter's intense radiation belts. It located the planet's magnetic field. And it also made the first accurate measurements of the masses of the Galileo satellites, which was Earth-shattering at the time, or Jupiter-shattering at the time. And I think another one is culturally. You know, Pioneer 10 showed hard work, good planning, produced a spacecraft that is durable beyond expectations. It's supposed to be 21 months. It lasted over 30 years, almost 31 years. Its birthday would be Sunday for the 30th. 30th. Now, one other thing, as a cultural icon, it carried this plaque. And we're emissaries for out to outer space.
Larry, would you believe that the smaller, faster, cheaper concept would not be to your liking as someone who comes from the old school of how to make spacecraft?
Well, you see, that's interesting you mention that, because Pioneer 10 was of that concept. It was very simple, as I mentioned. It was just like an outdoor TV dish antenna. It's about... when we translate the cost, of course, you take into account inflation, et cetera. It doesn't cost more than these cheaper, better...
This was a very cheap spacecraft.
Yeah.
Just a few hundred million bucks.
Voyager was more expensive, was the more billion-dollar type thing. This was like of the order of these Mars Pathfinder, these near, the Discovery-type projects. So I think it's... It has its place. These economical spacecraft. Obviously, this one did. This one did tremendous achievements for its dollars that were spent.
What how do you personally feel? Do you feel like you've lost a member of sort of a member of your family?
Well, it's been with me now for a long time. I've only been with it for 15 years. It's been over 30 years. So, but still, it's something I look forward to. I look forward to the contact, and I had so much optimism. I said, "Oh yeah, we're going to." Lots of times we thought we were losing it, and I said, "Oh no, I'm an optimist, eternal optimist." I said, "We're going to get it," and right up to the end, I said, "Oh, we're just right on bore sighted and everything." This next February 6th contact, I said, "We'll get it." Well, finally it gave out. So I was disappointed, but so happy that it lasted so long. And it's a great memory. I'm proud to be a member of the team.
Larry Lasher, thank you for joining us this hour. And good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
Larry Lasher, the project manager for Pioneer 10. He is at NASA's Ames Research Center in Moffett Field. Pioneer 10 launched in 1972, April of 1972. And it finally... It's 30 years later. It was a great run. Earlier, I spoke with Kathy Hudson and Victor McElhenney and David Baltimore. And just a reminder, our promote program is produced by Annette Heist, Charles Berquist, and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Our intern is Adrian McDonald. And if you'd like to write to us, please send your letters to Talk of the Nation Science Friday, 1221 6th Avenue, 36th floor, New York, New York, 10020. If you missed any part of the program, if you want to... listen to it. You can go over to our website at sciencefriday.com. You can hear a digital version of it. You can also download it to one of your Audible players. And you also find Science Friday's Kids Connection there, which is curricula, free curricula to schools and teachers based on Science Friday. So you get some free lessons out of that. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.